From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On Friday, House Speaker John Boehner threw in the towel. He got up, he says, prayed, and decided. He's resigning at the end of next month from the speakership and from Congress. His number two in the House, Kevin McCarthy, got a two-minute heads up. House right-wingers are claiming victory, a scalp, but what now? This hour On Point, the GOP after John Boehner. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you see coming? What do you want after Boehner? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here was the House Speaker on Friday. The day before he was with the Pope. Last night started thinking about it, got up, said his prayers. Here's the Speaker.
Last night I started thinking about this, and this morning I woke up and I said my prayers, as I always do, and I decided, you know, today's the day I'm going to do this. As simple as that. That's the code I've always lived by. If you do the right things for the right reasons, the right things will happen.
It was news to a lot of people all over the place. The president, his own number two, and right on down at the Values Voters Summit in Washington that same day. Conservative gathering there. Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, presidential hopeful, of course, broke the news that John Boehner would be stepping down. Listen as they respond to this news on the Speaker of the House.
Just a few minutes ago, Speaker Boehner announced that he will be resigning. Yeah!
Okay, we're going to hear in this hour from Boehner backers and Republican critics. Joining me first from Washington, Eliana Johnson, Washington editor for the National Review. Eliana, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Great to be with you.
Great to have you. Also from Washington, Molly Ball is with us, national political writer for The Atlantic. Molly, welcome back to you.
Hi, Tom. Great to be here.
Eliana, what is the meaning of that super enthusiasm at the news that John Boehner will quit in that group, from that group?
Well, at the Values Voters Summit, really you had represented some of the most conservative members of the Republican Party, really the sorts of constituents of the right flank of the GOP who have been agitating for Boehner's ouster. So they were tremendously enthusiastic about his resignation, and they considered it a real victory to see him go. And I think what you're going to see now is all of the congressmen who agitated for him to go did so without really having a plan for who might replace him as speaker. And that's a drama that you're going to see play out now in the next few weeks and months.
We're going to look at that chapter about figuring out who will succeed him. But there's looks like bigger issues here on what the GOP wants to be. Molly Ball, you write compellingly for The Atlantic. You say conservatives thought he was a sellout. Liberals thought he was a lightweight. His own deputies, and of course that was first Eric Cantor and then Kevin McCarthy, who may replace him. His own deputies disrespected him, you write. His caucus was totally out of his control. If he had any constituency at all, still quoting you here, Molly, it was the ever more powerless Beltway establishment, its own isolated and isolating club. Why did Boehner go now, Molly?
Well, what he said in his press conference on Friday was that he's actually been planning this for a long time. Last year, he decided he was going to leave at the end of 2014. But then you remember that surprise ouster of Eric Cantor, who had been the majority leader in a primary in June.
Yep.
And Boehner decided for the stability of the House and of the caucus, he would stay an extra year. So in his mind, he hadn't. This was not widely known, but in his mind, he was looking at leaving at the end of the 2015 calendar year. He was going to announce it on his birthday in mm-hmm. November. And but after the Pope's visit, which was something that he had a very large role in arranging and something that moved him very deeply as a devout Catholic.
We all saw that. It's not hard to see when John Boehner is moved. We all saw the tears.
He had no poker face. Yep. I've always said John Boehner has the best face in Washington because you can always tell exactly what he's feeling.
Yep.
And so I think the combination of that emotion and this jam he found himself in, he did not have a plan for how to avert another government shutdown, this time over Planned Parenthood and the new videos and the people in Congress, the Republicans in Congress who wanted to take away all of the government funding for Planned Parenthood in the budget. And so this was something that this was a way he could solve that problem. He faced the possibility that if he got a bill passed that funded Planned Parenthood, he could lose his speakership. So by preempting that by giving up his speakership. That's now off the table, and there's a very good chance that the government will stay funded.
And is he happy to be headed out? Well, just listen to him here. This is on Friday, talking about his legacy, but what he comes to is zippity-doo-dah, I'm out of here.
I was never in the legacy business. You all heard me say it. I'm a regular guy with a big job. And I never thought I'd be in Congress, much less ever be Speaker. People know me as being fair, being honest, being straightforward, and trying to do the right thing every day on behalf of the country. Yeah, that's I don't need any more than it.
Speaker Boehner, you seem very relieved. In
your zippity doo da, zippity.
Is that the sound of a relieved man? I would think so. I want to listen back for just a second, Molly and Eliana. This was 2013. And there was a visible, audible frustration from Boehner about the government shutdown and how it all worked out. Afterward, Republicans paid a price for it. They weren't happy about that. And it's his famous, are you kidding me moment, talking about people within his own party.
They pushed us into this fight to defund Obamacare and to shut down the government. Most of you know, my members know, that wasn't exactly the strategy that I had in mind. But if you recall, the day before the government reopened, one of the people at one of these groups stood up and said, well, we never really thought it would work. Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me? In 2013, and again, on Face the Nation yesterday, here's a bit of a long clip, but this is Boehner talking about false prophets and frenzy that gets nothing done. Again, talking mainly about his fellow Republicans, many of whom cheered him going.
The Bible says, beware of false prophets. And there are people out there, you know, spreading noise about how much can get done. I mean, this whole idea that we're going to shut down the government to get rid of Obamacare in 2013, this plan never had a chance. But over the course of the August recess in 2013 and the course of September, you know, a lot of my Republican colleagues who knew it was a fool's errand, really, they were getting all this pressure from home to do this. And so we got groups here in town, members of the House and Senate here in town, who whip people into a frenzy believing they can accomplish things that they know are never going to happen.
John Boehner yesterday on Face the Nation. Eliana Johnson, false prophets, fool's errand, frenzy. Who's happy that John Boehner's going? Who's not?
Well, I think the problem that you heard Boehner talk about there is that you've got two groups here. On the one hand, Boehner's conservative critics. On the other hand, House leadership embodied by Boehner that really don't have a plan. You heard Boehner say there that conservative groups and conservative members are demanding that leadership fight the Obama administration in ways that are counterproductive, take on unwinnable fights. But what conservatives are frustrated by is that House leadership hasn't proposed an alternative way to fight the administration or a superior way to fight back against the Obama administration. And Boehner's alternative has really been advancing sort of bipartisan legislation that appeals to business groups. And I think conservatives have felt demoralized that Boehner hasn't proposed a superior method for pushing back against the Obama administration. And so while conservatives haven't proposed an alternative to their unwinnable fights, they say Boehner hasn't, for his part, proposed an alternative to what they see as caving in.
You've got Republican Senator Ted Cruz not unhappy at all with this news. Here he is talking with Fox yesterday.
I hope that we see a new Speaker of the House who is a strong conservative. And what I think is most important for House leadership, and for that matter for Senate leadership, is that they will actually honor the commitments we made to the men and women who elected us.
Ted Cruz, who is always gung-ho to go. On the other hand, here's Republican Peter King out of New York saying crazies have taken over the party.
I think it signals that crazies have taken over the party, taken over to the party that you can remove a Speaker of the House who's second in line to be president, a constitutional officer in the middle of his term with no allegations of impropriety, a person who's honest and doing his job.
Molly Ball, was this a coup? I mean, John Boehner took the step himself, but was he, in effect, forced out?
Well, I think he preempted a coup because he didn't want that humiliation, and he didn't want that institutional disruption. I mean, the one thing that you heard Boehner say over and over again in his press conference and again yesterday was that his first priority is the institution. He's an institutionalist. He cares about the institution of the House, the institution of Congress. That's not something that his caucus largely cares about. They care about the fight. They care about pushing these issues and resisting the president. And Boehner cared about that fight, but secondarily to sort of preserving stability and following the procedures of the House. So I think those priorities came into conflict, and it was possible that that conflict was going to end in him being deposed. Now, he said yesterday that he had plenty of votes to stay in. And I do think the majority, the large majority of the Republican caucus does support him. The House Freedom Caucus is a few dozen very, very noisy members. But when you need a majority of the House, when you need 218 votes to do anything, you don't have to lose too many votes out of your majority to start putting that in peril when you don't have any Democrats on your side.
Eliana, we just got half a minute before the break. 247 Republicans in the House. How many support John Boehner? I mean, you got, what, I don't know, 50 or so in this Tea Party-ish group. But out of 247, how many do you think are happy to see him go? How many would like somebody that Peter King might call crazy?
Right. You know, I think what Boehner didn't want is to have to rely on Democrats for his reelection as Speaker. I think he wanted the support of his conference. And I'd say there are probably 40 or 50 Republicans who are, you know, loud dissenters would have opposed Boehner's reelection as Speaker.
Are they driving the boat now?
You know, I think we've seen the real diminishment of the role as Speaker under Boehner, or since Newt Gingrich, and I don't think they're driving the boat because they don't have an alternative plan, but they are certainly gaining influence.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Republican Party after John Boehner on Capitol Hill. And across the country, a party divided on how conservative, how confrontational it wants to be. And John Boehner prayed, and he's out of there. End of October. Molly Ball is with us, national political writer for The Atlantic. Eliana Johnson is here from National Review. We'll hear from a sitting congressman not too happy with John Boehner anyway in a moment, and from a former congressman who has been a fan. Here's Boehner yesterday, CBS, talking with John Dickerson about how he wants to be remembered. Dickerson first.
So in a year or so, you'll be back in Statuary Hall for the unveiling of your portrait. And what do you want them to say about you at that ceremony?
He was a good man.
That's it.
That's all.
A couple more, and we'll go to Representative Walter Jones. Here's John McCain talking to reporters on Friday about what he hopes is a lesson learned in the resignation.
I'm sad because I have a great respect and affection for Speaker Boehner, but I respect his decision. But I hope that the lesson to all of us is now that let's stop fighting with each other.
Not everybody happy to see, sorry to see him go. Tim Hillskamp, Kansas, conservative, been very critical of Boehner, glad to see him go.
At the end of the day, John Boehner has been very vindictive. And that was hopefully in the past, and we'll move forward from that. But no other speaker I know of in the history of this country, and obviously this would be modern speakers only, actually went after their own membership, had their super PAC run ads against them.
Tim Hillskamp talking with NPR's All Things Considered. And one more, Ohio Governor John Kasich, like Ted Cruz, running for president, talked with Face the Nation yesterday, not so happy about all this and the direction the GOP is going.
A lot of the people who are doing the complaining and saying, why isn't anything getting done? Maybe they ought to look in the mirror. What have they accomplished? I mean, are they just speech makers? Are they just people out there yelling and screaming?
Congressman Walter Jones, Republican of North Carolina, 3rd Congressional District there, joins us right now. Walter Jones, Congressman Jones, thank you so much for being here.
Tom, good day, and thank you for the opportunity.
Are you happy that John Boehner is resigning?
Yes, I tell you, Tom, I am one of those who have not voted for John Boehner the last two sessions of Congress, and I am also will tell you that I have nothing against John personally, but let me read from the Mark Meadows House Resolution 385, just one sentence.
Okay.
Whereas the Speaker uses the power of the office to punish members who vote according to their conscience instead of the will of the Speaker. That is what's wrong with Congress, and John Boehner, in my opinion, has not been a good leader because he expects everybody to vote the way he wants instead of those representatives like myself voting the will of the people we represent.
Congressman, you may have heard Speaker Boehner yesterday on Face the Nation quoting the Bible, saying beware of false prophets. He said that his critics in the House were pushing fool's errands, driving people into a frenzy for things that are never going to happen, ends up hurting the GOP and the country, he says. How do you respond to that?
All right. There's a book out called Extortion by Peter Swigert, how politicians extract your money by votes and line their own pockets. One quick back statement on the back. John Boehner's tail booth, how the Speaker of the House extracts money by soliciting political donations so he will bring crucial votes to the floor of the House. In other words, Washington is controlled by outside money. Washington, Tom, should be controlled by the people we represent.
What about the Speaker? He presents it as a political analysis here, and he looks at the votes and says the things that his conservative critics want aren't going to happen, so he calls him a fool's errand and says, you know, his critics are misleading Republicans about what they can actually do.
Well, Tom, when you're the Speaker of the House, you have a lot of power, and why in the world would we continue to fund Planned Parenthood after those videos that came out just a few weeks ago? Why wouldn't he be strong enough to say to the president, we will continue to fund the government, but we're not going to fund Planned Parenthood, and send it to the president and let the president shut down the government? No, he would rather blame we conservatives who believe in the word of God and therefore play the political game, and that's why he is stepping down.
His number two is Kevin McCarthy. Do you think he would lead in the fashion that you'd like to see leadership, Congressman?
Absolutely not. That's more of the same. I think that would be a horrible decision for the Republicans in the House and for our nation.
So who would you throw your weight behind?
Well, I voted for Dan Webster in January of 2015. Dan is a Republican, conservative, and the former Speaker of the Florida House of Representatives. I think he is a fair-minded person who believes in the Judeo-Christian values and the Constitution of America, and I think he would be the right man at this time.
It sounds as though you see yourself as representing your constituents in wanting to go that way. Speaker Boehner's been around a while, and he says it's a fool's errand. It's not going to happen. It will lead to, just problems down the road, i.e. it's disappointment, disillusionment.
Well, Tom, this book I made reference to, Extraction, is critical of Pelosi and Boehner. Boehner is more interested in taking care of the money people instead of the people of America.
So what's going to change? I mean, people look at the numbers in Congress and say that the sort of Tea Party crowd, maybe, I don't know, it's 40, 50, 60 congressmen and women there. How does that turn the boat?
Well, if we can come together as the 50 or 60 that you just mentioned, then we can really have some influence as to who becomes the next Speaker of the House of Representatives. That is why when I'm heading back today, I will have several meetings with my colleagues. I'm in the Liberty Caucus. There's the Liberty Caucus and the Freedom Caucus. Together, the numbers that you just mentioned, Tom, are about right, 50 to 60. If we could come together as a bloc, we could dictate who's going to be the next Speaker of the House.
Congressman Walter Jones, 3rd Congressional District of North Carolina, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom. Have a good day.
Steve LaTourette joins us in just a moment. Molly Ball, do some check the figures and the power equation for us here. Can the Liberty Caucus and its ilk in the House end up being the deciding factor in who becomes the next Speaker?
Well, if you listen to what he's saying is not that they have enough votes to elect their own preferred speaker, right? They don't have 218 votes to elect Dan Webster, congressman from Florida, who's become a sort of odd face of this alternative speaker movement. He's not exactly one of the sort of bomb throwers of the caucus, but he's someone who got 12 votes for speaker, surprisingly, in the last speaker election. And so what they're saying is they're issuing a threat. They're saying we have the votes to block whoever the establishment puts up, likely to be Kevin McCarthy. Thought that McCarthy has the speaker vote more or less wrapped up. But they can give him some significant heartburn, and they can put some roadblocks in his way.
Eliana, how effective do you think they can be? I mean, Kevin McCarthy's seen as having a big head of steam. Is he the guy? And if it is him, does he turn the House in a distinctly new direction from Boehner's?
There are a couple factors at work. One is I think they're going to look to exact concessions from McCarthy in exchange for throwing their support behind him if they do, and to elevate more conservative members into leadership. Right now, there's one conservative member, Steve Scalise of Louisiana, in leadership. And some of the concessions that they'll look to exact are both on policy and in terms of elevating their members up into there. Tom Price is eyeing a run, and Daniel Webster, you mentioned, and they'll look for some policy concessions as well. The other factor at work here is that Kevin McCarthy has a far more solid relationship with some of these rebellious conservative members than did John Boehner, because he was the recruitment chair in the class of 2010 when a lot of these guys – Tim Hulskamp, who you mentioned, Mick Mulvaney, Reid Ribble, Scott Desjarlais. These are some of the guys who were agitating for Boehner's ouster. Kevin McCarthy recruited them to run in 2010. And of the 87 new members who were elected to Congress in 2010, 63 of them remain in the conference. Kevin McCarthy has cultivated warm relationships with them. And I think that will make it somewhat easier for him to secure their support and, at the very least, to negotiate with them for their support in this fight.
Eliana, please stand by. And Molly Ball, listeners, I see your calls coming in aplenty here, but I've got Steve LaTourette with us right now. Let me turn to him for a minute. I will come to those calls. Steve LaTourette served as Republican, U.S. Rep for Ohio's 19th, 14th congressional districts from 95 to 2013, a long time in the House. He is president of the Main Street Partnership now. It's a group of centrist, moderate conservative members of the Republican Party. Steve LaTourette, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
What do you see in your friend, I think it's fair to say, John Boehner's resignation?
Well, I see a selfless act. You know, basically, John never wanted to be the issue. He was becoming the issue for this small but noisy group within the Republican conference. And, you know, he said it well on Friday. I mean, he believes in the institution. He thought that was his number one job. The institution is being rendered apart with this infighting. A Republican majority really isn't behaving like a majority. They're not getting anything done because they can't get the votes within their conference to move legislation. And he made it clear, as did Mitch McConnell earlier in the year, that there aren't going to be any more government shutdowns. And now, as a result of his stepping down this week, I would expect you'd see a clean continuing resolution come to the floor, maybe the Senate-passed version. The government will stay open, and the Republican Party will not suffer the embarrassment that it has suffered, you know, a couple of years ago when the government was shut down by folks who don't quite understand the legislative process.
But Steve LaTourette, maybe the Republican Party at large doesn't want it to be all about the institution now. What John Boehner said, I mean, look at the presidential race between Donald Trump, Ben Carson, and Carly Fiorina. None of them part of any party institution. Not even elected office. You've got more than half the Republican support in polls right now nationally. Maybe Republicans don't want this to be about the institution as we've known it.
Well, but you know what? I have never understood why people that don't like the government want to be involved in the government. I mean, the key word in government is governing, and you know, I'm with John. You have a responsibility when you're in the government to try and figure out how to make things work. These guys, you know, parade around with the Constitution like they wrote the Constitution. Well, if they had written the Constitution, we'd be living in a theocracy today, not a democracy. And you know, the founding fathers were all about finding the common ground to move the country forward, and that seems to be lost. Now, I think I disagree with you. I mean, you have a bloc within the Republican Party that is sizable, and they have to be paid attention to. That, you know, it's burn the place down, shut it down, so forth and so on. There are a lot of applause lines.
Yeah.
I mean, I could go give a speech and get standing ovations every moment of the day if I talk like Ted Cruz. But that's not, I think that's what John was talking about yesterday, that they're not being realistic.
But standing ovations very often can mean votes, and votes, that's what determines who's in charge in a democracy.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, again, at the end of the day, I think you have a responsibility to do what's right. Mm-hmm. And part of the problem, in my mind, and one of the reasons that I left, you have people that are more concerned about the next election and not alienating, a few people so they can be reelected rather than doing what is right for the country. And I think that more than the money that Walter was talking about or some of the other things, it really is what is a shame today, and it really shouldn't be that way.
Need some talking here. I mean, alienated voters will vote for what they vote for. Doyle is calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Doyle, you're on with former Congressman Steve LaTourette. What do you think, Doyle?
Hi, Tom. One is I'd like for you and your commentary there to answer the question, if the Republicans win a larger majority in the House and take back the Senate, what was the actual price paid for shutting down the government? Because you've repeated several times in the course of this interview that there's a price to be paid, but if you win a larger majority in each body, what is the price to be paid for shutting down the government?
Well, and you're right. They've had shutdowns, and they've had growing strength on Capitol Hill. Steve LaTourette, what do you say to that? I mean, Doyle says, look, you know, they've been on this road, and they're doing all right electorally.
Yeah, I mean, that's a valid point, and I think one that needs to be considered. But I guess at the end of the day, is that what this is all about? In other words, getting to 245 members, it's like the dog that catches the car. You say, okay, what are you going to do with it? And until that number is 290 and over 60 in the Senate, the fact of the matter is that you still have to deal with the constitutional realities, and that is that you have a president of the United States who has veto power, and you need to use your leverage in a realistic way. Go to the government shutdown. There are a number of things that the Republicans could have demanded and demanded concessions from the president on relative to the budget that were realistic. You know, things like the tax on durable medical equipment that's contained in Obamacare and other things where the president would have been hard-pressed to go to his people and say, hey, we're going to shut down the government based upon my resistance to this.
Yep.
When you make it easy for the president to say, okay, and take Planned Parenthood, for instance. I think Planned Parenthood should be defunded. I think that these videos are shocking, but you know, when you talk about popular support, I think Planned Parenthood, because of the non-abortion work they do, polls at about 60% of favorability across the country. Republicans poll at about 21%. So I mean, it's you have to figure out how to achieve that goal without over-promising and under-delivering, and that's the difficulty. These folks have no. At the end of the day, you have no plan B, and there's, you know, to your caller, I would say that the last government shutdown led to, the Republican Party being in single digits in terms of popularity, and that's not good, and that the whole thing belies the fact, what are you going to do to have it be good for the country? I mean, there's a ton of stories that are accurate that say that it costs more money to shut the government down than it does to keep it open.
But they gained seats in the House. Is the GOP locked in the battle with its own voting base?
Well, sure it is. I mean, there's great dissatisfaction in portions of the Republican base that they don't believe that the Republicans are pushing hard enough. They're not pushing the envelope hard enough, and they're not they're not doing what they said they would do in 2010 and 2012 when people rewarded them with the votes. And the key to governing, I think, is one, being true to your campaign promises and doing the things that you say that you're going to do, and that is challenging the ideology of the president and the Democratic Party where the parties differ. But at the same time, I believe, and maybe this is where I get in trouble and John Boehner gets in trouble, that you have to work within the confines of the way that the country's set up. And the way the country's set up is that you have three branches of government, and within the legislative branch, you have two houses of Congress, and you got a president of the United States. And you can't govern unless you figure out a way to thread that needle.
Hi. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the Republican Party after John Boehner on Capitol Hill and across the country with Molly Ball, national political writer for The Atlantic, Eliana Johnson, Washington editor for The National Review. Steve LaTourette is with us, longtime was a congressman from Ohio, 1995 to 2013. He's now president of the Main Street Partnership, kind of centrist, moderate conservatives. We heard earlier from Walter Jones, congressman out of North Carolina, very glad to see John Boehner go. Here was John Boehner on Friday, the day he announced that he would step down from the speakership and from Congress on October 30th, explaining his decision.
It's become clear to me that this prolonged leadership turmoil would do irreparable harm to the institution. Now, as you've often heard me say, this isn't about me. It's about the people. It's about the institution.
Well, it was about him for a lot of conservative Republicans who have cheered his departure. Here he is saying that, well, as long as they focus on the common good, everything will be fine.
If the Congress stays focused on the American people's priorities, there will be no problem at all. And while we have differences between Democrats and Republicans, the goal here, as one of the leaders, is to find the common ground.
Well, maybe that was John Boehner's goal. I don't know if it's everybody's goal. Brad in Omaha, Nebraska. Brad, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I feel like I'm a registered independent voter,
okay.
And I don't feel like I'm getting anything for my taxes in the way of government. I think what's been going on with the Boehner approach isn't working. I say let the Tea Party come and do their thing, and let the far left do their thing. Let somebody govern, and if it doesn't work, then the voters will speak, but no one's governing at this point. We're just all muddling in the middle.
Brad, I appreciate your call. Steve LaTourette, hey, we can't just muddle forever. Let the Tea Party have its agenda for a while, and at least we'll have some motion. What do you say?
Well, you really won't have any motion because, you know, the fact of the matter is, I mean, again, you have to deal with the reality of how our government was structured by the founding fathers,
mm-hmm.
And we have two parties. And so, you know, again, there are checks and balances, and until the Republicans get 290 votes in the House to override a veto from a Democratic president, you're not going to have a motion. And what John was talking about, and the difference between what John is talking about and what your caller is talking about, is that what he's described is what's going on now. You have the Tea Party, very conservative wing of the Republicans in the House, sort of hijacking the system and not supplying the votes necessary to move legislation forward. And you have the far left of the Democratic Party in charge of the Democratic caucus. And as a result, there's no meeting of the minds. There's no legislation. And then take something that, you know, one of the biggest shames of this Congress, and maybe it gets fixed this week with John's departure, is something as simple as a transportation bill. My God.
Highways.
What's partisan about highways? I mean, you know, have you ever driven on a Democratic bridge or a Republican road? Of course not.
Maybe.
Well, maybe you have, but I haven't. And I'm going to tell you that's, you know, why is that caught up in bickering? The same thing with the reauthorization of the Federal Aviation Administration. My God, we shut down our nation's aviation system during the last shutdown. And what? How does that benefit the country? How does that move it forward? How does that benefit your caller in Nebraska when air traffic doesn't move in this country, or when roads are filled with potholes?
Eliana Johnson, how do you look at this? You're at National Review. They've got kind of a conservative bent. Paul Krugman, sort of a liberal columnist, says it's a blackmail going on by the Republican Party's far right. John Boehner called it a fool's errand, suggesting they're sort of delusional. And Steve LaTourette is suggesting something similar. Is it delusion that's underway here, or how do you explain that what's going on inside the party here?
Yeah, I think what you're really seeing is, on the one hand, Boehner talking, and you hear Mitch McConnell say this a lot, about preserving the institution. And I think you're really seeing Donald Trump, for example, play on Americans' growing distrust of institutions, political yeah. institutions, financial institutions, even the police. And then you have the far right in the party really wanting to talk about vision, ideological vision. And so I think there's going to have to be – the Republican Party in general has done a pretty good job of incorporating the Tea Party without being taken over by it. But there's going to have to be some sort of a combination or rapprochement between these two sides where respect for the institution is combined with some sort of ideological vision. And I think that's where Boehner sort of fell short. He certainly had the respect for the institution that the Tea Party may not have, but didn't articulate an ideological vision that was persuasive to the far right of his party. And you know, politics is in part about persuasion, whether through fear or through love or respect, whatever mm-hmm. it may be. And mm-hmm. that's where I think he fell short. And ideology, it, you know, matters. And I think the next leader is going to have to combine vision with some of this institutional longevity and respect that we've heard the leaders talk so much about.
Molly Ball, do you see a way for Boehner's successor to thread this needle, to not go on what Boehner called fool's errands? I don't know if his successor will look at them that way. But at the same time, to sing a kind of a ideological song here, to put out a vision that would keep people mollified, or is it going to have to be, you know, defund Planned Parenthood or we're out of here, repeal Obamacare or we're out of here?
Well, you know, for a long time, the debate in Washington has been, does John Boehner have an impossible job or is he just bad at his job? And I think the answer was always yes. And so what we're going to see when somebody else becomes speaker is whether anybody else could do a better job or whether it is just such an impossible position that nobody could possibly have done any better. You know, I think Aliana made a great point. I think Walter Jones had a point when he said that these far-right members of Congress are representing their constituents. The constituency of the Republican Party really did go to the polls last fall to elect a Congress that would be more confrontational with the president and that would really, as Eliana said, propose a lot of their own ideas, propose a governing agenda for the Republican Party. And all we've really seen this Congress do is try to keep the lights on and pass a free trade bill, which was the one thing where they agreed with the president. So there hasn't been, in a lot of ways, the people who gave the Republicans this big majority and took over the Senate back in 2014 feel they haven't gotten what they were promised, which was a Republican Party that was going to show it could govern, put big ideas on the table, pass bills through both houses, put them on the president's desk, dare him to veto them. Mm-hmm. And that's what people want to see.
Here's a listener on the website, onpointradio.org. Media is fawning over a guy, John Boehner, who many in his party didn't even want. But here's another. Chuck says, these single-issue Republicans trying to recreate the 1950s are going to keep blaming everyone else and never get anything done to deal with the issues that matter today. But there have been plenty of votes out there for that vision. Claire in Madison, Wisconsin. Claire, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Tom. I think these representatives need to go back to civics class. This is a democracy. That means that these representatives that ran for office, they signed up for this. They have to learn how to work together. There has to be some compromise somewhere, or absolutely nothing is ever going to get done. And I, as a taxpayer, find it extremely frustrating.
What about their constituents at home who may be saying to them, you hang tough. I want you to be ideologically pure.
That's fine and dandy, but that's maybe 10%. What about the other 90?
Yeah, and Claire wants some action in Washington. I appreciate your call, Claire. Bill in Norwalk, Iowa. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you see, Bill?
It's real simple. You know, the GOP, the Republican base, we've never had a great way of getting our message out. The liberals and Democrats have always done a fabulous job of it. I can't stand the fact that they go on the attack, even if it's the dumbest subjects ever. They get on the attack. They get their message out. and the and our representatives, it's like they're timid. They're afraid.
I thought Republicans were the great experts at messaging, from Ronald Reagan right on down.
You know what? I thought so, too, but they have done I think if you look back the last 6 years, they've done a terrible job of getting the message out, and it's disappointing. And my question is very simple to the representative, with all due respect from Ohio.
Yep.
What have they done? What have they done? They wanted the House, gave it to them. They wanted the Senate, gave it to them. My question is, the common taxpayer, common conservative, what have they done? That's pretty simple. And I'm not talking getting into all these bills that we don't understand. I'm talking Obamacare, taxes, the middle class. What has been done to help us? Nothing.
But are you saying, Bill, that unless they overturn Obamacare, they've done nothing? Unless they, cut taxes or defund Planned Parenthood, they've done nothing? Is that what you're saying?
Very simple. When they passed Obamacare, we were told premiums would go down. I'm a healthy, in my young 40s, I'm healthy. My premiums have skyrocketed for almost to 37%, and no one talks about it. All we hear is it's the insurance company's fault. We hear it's Obamacare's fault. Nothing's being done. We were told it was going to be cheap or affordable. It's not affordable. Let's just start there. Why are premiums out of control? And the finger pointing goes on, and no one takes responsibility of telling us, here's what we're going to do about this right now.
Bill, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. We're talking about the GOP after John Boehner. Steve LaTourette, Bill wants to boil it all the way down there, but you hear the specific and the larger sense that that Washington's not working for him. So what's the point of giving the Republicans these votes, or anybody for that matter?
Well, a couple of things. I mean, he makes a valid point. I didn't vote for the Affordable Care Act. As a matter of fact, I think I voted to repeal it 45 times. But again, that's within the... again, you have to operate within the framework that is the government. So the House has voted multiple times. The Senate has voted to eliminate Obamacare, or the Democrats in the Senate have blocked it getting to the president's desk. The president has vetoed it. The Supreme Court has ruled on it. And so that's really the art of, you know, being a legislator. You have to figure out how to get the result you want, and at least that I think is the appropriate response. It was a bad bill when it was passed, and it continues to be problematic. How are you going to benefit the fellow in Iowa in a way that works?
And how does the GOP resolve its divisions, Steve? You've got your friend John Boehner out here.
Yep. Well, here's the deal, and I want to go back to something that Molly said, and you've been hinting at as well. People like Walter Jones and others are, in fact, representing the people that sent them to Washington.
Yeah.
But, you know, Walter Jones, my district was east of Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Walter Jones couldn't be elected in my district. I couldn't be elected in Walter Jones's district. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's two different things. You have 50 to 60 Republican members of the House that gain re-election with 60, 70, 75% in the fall. And their challenge is the primary election, because if they get outflanked to the right, you're going to send a new, very, very conservative person from the 3rd District of North Carolina. In my area and where the centrists are in the mid-Atlantic states and New England and everything else, you know, we sort of get along with 52, 53, 54%. And you cannot be a bomb thrower be elected either as a Republican or a Democrat.
But if they can't change, if they can't compromise without being thrown out, you're suggesting the GOP can't resolve this internal tension.
Well, but they can. I mean, and that's the, it's the, you know, when we had the on the brink of my last sort of act was the fiscal cliff at the end of 2012, mm-hmm. when John sort of threw up his hands and offered the serenity prayer because you know, and they're to one of your callers' point about taxes. There's the best example of these guys and why I called them chuckleheads at the end of that discussion. You had. In January of 2013, taxes were going to go up on every American. The Bush tax cuts of 2001 and 2003 were set to expire. The president was holding firm and said that anybody over making $250,000 or more was rich. Mitch McConnell reached a deal with the Democrats that said, no, you're not rich until you make $450,000. John Boehner came down with a plan B and said, I need to have this piece of legislation to go to negotiate with the Senate, negotiate with the president. And so we're going to say that the threshold is $1 million. And that doesn't mean that he believed that if you make more than $1 million, your taxes should go up and, you know, sort of screw you. It meant that by setting it at that number, 99.2%, I think, of Americans would not have suffered a tax increase in January of 2013. Yeah. This block of folks and what John is talking about said, we're not going to vote for that because we don't want taxes to go up on anybody. And that's a decent position. But what would that have meant, Tom, on January the 1st? By not getting the president a bill, or by getting the president a bill that he couldn't live with, it meant that taxes would go up on every American. Yeah. And so that's the kind of cut off your nose, despite your face activity that they engage in that is not realistic within the framework that we were given by our founders.
Molly Ball, you've got people talking about Congress going to look like Dante's Inferno. According to the New York Times, this fall, I mean, you've got the raise the debt ceiling, you've got the highway programs expiring, you've got a longer-term spending bill deadline sometime early December. Do you see Dante's Inferno coming, Molly?
I've always thought it was more like a painting by Hieronymus Bosch, but maybe that's
lovely.
A fine distinction.
All those writhing, suffering, tortured bodies in the dark.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, what I think we're going to see is whether, as I said before, anybody else can do a better job than John Boehner at bridging some of these divides, trying to bring the Republican conference together, trying to craft a majority that can govern, and trying to see if the Republicans then can keep their promises. I think it's going to be – and it's going to matter not only because of those policy issues that you mentioned, but because the Republicans have a very lively presidential primary right now. 2016 is going to be a very hard-fought election. Congress can be an asset to the Republican nominee, or it can be something they have to run away from.
Eliana, briefly, does Boehner's resignation help the mainstream presidential candidates or the outsiders?
Well, I think it's certainly a boon to the outsiders. And, you know, I think what comes next is this Congress actually did do a lot. They stopped a lot of what President Obama was trying to push through Congress. And I think the next chapter we'll see, can Republicans put forward and pass alternatives, even if the president would veto them? And that gets to will the next leader have enough vision
to do it? Eliana Johnson with National Review. Thank you very much for being with us today, Eliana.
Thanks, Tom.
Molly Ball, national political writer for The Atlantic. Thanks so much, Molly, as always.
Thank you.
And Steve LaTourette, president of the Mainstream Partnership. Thanks for coming in, Steve. Great to have you.
Pleasure.
Thanks as well to Congressman Walter Jones out of North Carolina. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.